SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, hour three. We talked yesterday to Hugh Robertson about the win in the Presque Isle Masters for Hotshot Anna. And actually, it turned out that I guess Marcus Hirsch a couple days ago had gotten that piece of news. So first reported by Marcus that Hotshot Anna was going to bypass the Breeders' Cup. But the other big stake from that weekend, from last Sunday, was the Presque Isle Mile, the $200,000 mile. And when Decorated Soldier won it, I said to myself, I got to get to Norm McKnight, who has been tearing it up. And of course, last year, surprised Mark Cassie by taking the Woodbine training title. And Norm McKnight joins us. Norm, congratulations on assorted successes.
No, thank you very much, Steve.
It's great to have you on. And Decorated Soldier, very much like the conversation I had with you yesterday about Hotshot Anna, she has really elevated her game on synthetic. That included at Arlington and then at Presque. And the same could be said. You claimed Decorated Soldier. And we'll talk about the ownership team, but a modest claim at Oaklawn near the end of the meet. And he's really come alive on the synthetic. Talk about the success you're having with him.
Well, you know, he's been a terrific little horse for us since we claimed him. You know, when we looked to claim the horse, we really had no idea he'd turn out this well for us. You know, we're all very thankful that he has. You know, we claimed him off Steve Asmussen in Oaklawn Park for around $20,000, if I remember correctly. You know, he was in great condition, and he was well taken care of. He was a sound horse when we got him. And but when we had claimed the horse, we claimed him with the thought that, you know, the Tapita track may be beneficial to him, you know. And it really seems like, you know, the old saying, and I've said this before, horses for courses. This is this really seems to be one that, you know, other than the difference in the surface that he was running on prior and where he is at now, you know, that's the only reason I can think of why this horse's career has kind of skyrocketed for us. Mm-hmm.
Well, and he, you know, he had always been cut out to be a nice horse. And I know that, you know, going back to his days with Todd Pletcher and with Eclipse and Clark Brewster, you mentioned Steve Asmussen. Clark and Steve claimed him from Todd and from Aaron Wellman. And the progress and your experience with the synthetic surface, I mean, talk about what you look for in horses like this when you think you've identified somebody that may be more comfortable and might move up on the poly or the Tapita in this case.
Well, you know, it's always kind of a crapshoot when you're trying to map something out and you hope it materializes, but you know, the horse had been on synthetic on turf before, and we've never had an opportunity to put this horse on the grass yet. You know, that was kind of he had a kind of a trouble trip. The line I was looking at, he was in a, I think he was in a stake race at the time. He finished fourth or fifth, not being all that much, but the chart line said he was blocked and stopped, and you know, had a trouble trip. So based, you know, that line kind of caught my eye, and I thought, well, geez, you know, if he does lay the grass, there's a good chance that this horse could move up on the synthetic. And that was really what kind of edged me on to take him, you know, to claim him.
Unbelievable. And then when you get under that circumstance and with the experience you're getting by running over the winter at Oaklawn, you're then bringing them back to Toronto, and you know, when you get them onto the track on the training track, do you see right away that, and that you feel like it's going to pay dividends? Can you, as you watch them get over?
You know, this horse in particular, prior to him starting, and I watched him, and I said to my assistant, which is my son Bradley, I watched him breeze one morning here prior to his first start here, and I said, my goodness, I said, I know you're going to think I'm nuts, but I'm going to take a shot and run this horse for 60. You know, I said, he breezed like an absolute freak this morning. I said, he breezed like a real good horse. And, you know, he's run to that every start. So by watching him breeze that morning, that was my gut feeling, and it's turned out. Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. He wins there, and it's funny. He then comes back, and you run 1-2 in June with him, and he gets caught by Florida One that you train. And I'm actually kind of familiar with Florida One. It came back, in fact, just over the weekend and ran second in the Durham Cup.
Yes, you know, and I mean, they're both a pair of nice horses, and they both come through the claim box. You know, and the latter horse, Florida One, he actually won the Presque Isle Mile a few years ago too. So, you know, now they both have that in their accomplishments, the Presque Isle Mile. But both nice horses, and this horse in particular is a very handsome horse and just a real, real nice horse to be around. Like, you know, he's almost, you could, you know, say he's a kid's pet. You know what I mean? He's just a lovely horse.
Well, and you took the exact same route, actually, with Florida One, between the Seagram Cup and winning there, and then, you know, going to Presque Isle. You also, the win at Presque Isle also made me smile. I'm a big Willie Martinez fan, and Willie gave him just a perfect ride.
He did. We had discussed the race prior, and I think Pablo, I can't recall the horse's name, but Pablo Morales was riding a horse that was coming off sprints. And I said, well, you've got an inside post. You've got to take Pablo to the turn. He's probably going to be speed. But I said, run out of there like you want the lead and see what he does. You know, I said, if he's going to press you to want the lead himself, then let him go. And I said, this horse will sit off with no problems. Like, he's a horse you can start up and then shut down whenever you want. He does whatever you ask of him. So, you know, that was kind of our game plan, and Pablo was committed to going to the front. He set toward fractions. We had a fantastic trip. He sat just off the you know, the front running in very quick fractions, and then was able to close and hold on. You know, and I think there was maybe a fifth or 2 seconds off of the track record, too.
How about that? In fact, just looking up, yeah, 134-4, and this went 135 and change. And you got the luxury now, Norm, with him. You know, how do you close out his 5-year-old season?
Well, you know, we're kind of shooting. I think it's early November for the Autumn Stakes here at Woodbine. And then, believe it or not, we've actually entered this horse in the November Keeneland sales in Kentucky.
Why not? Why not?
Yeah. Well, we just, you know, I just thought it was probably, you know, just mapping out a good business regime. He, you know, he was claimed for 20. I think he's made 270-some-odd thousand now. He'll have a shot at the Autumn if he's doing well. He appears to come out of that Presque Isle Mile in terrific order. So, you know, all systems are go right now for the Autumn. And if he runs well in there, you know, he could make himself another 60,000 or so. And then this would be the time to market him to sell, because his form is very good. You know, if we could get lucky and win the Autumn Stakes, that would be icing on the cake. Then he would be going into a sale off three stake victories, graded stake victories. So that would be just you know, an accomplishment. And I think that would be an absolute time to try and maximize on it from a business end, while the horse is still in terrific shape and looks good and sound. And, you know, that would leave the door open for, you know, a very, very nice career for the people that may purchase them. I mean, of course, I believe the clients would probably put a, probably put a reserve on him of some sort. Sure. We haven't discussed that yet, but it's part of having fun. I mean, everyone likes to make a dollar too, so we just thought this was the time to maximize the investment.
Tell us about the owners too, about the team here, Racer's Edge and of course Maxis. We know their name.
Yeah, well, Racer's Edge is a fairly young fellow. He's a local lad here from Toronto. He's in marketing of some sort, consulting and marketing. I don't know exactly what he does, but he's been. I've trained horses on off for his family for years, and so he's Racer's Edge, and he's been involved with this horse from the get go. And Maxis Stable is a gentleman that actually called me from Texas last fall. Sid Carmi is the fellow's name. And he's very happy with how this horse has been performing, as is everyone else. So, yeah, that's the two clients there. One, I think Sid Carmi has a stuffed animal. I think he does all the stuffed animal business for all the carnivals and fairs and stuff like that.
I love it. I love it.
That's what his business is, yeah, I believe.
Nice. Well, you know, for you yourself, and I still have to talk about, we have to talk about Silent Mistake, who won the Victorian Queen on Saturday. But before we do that, talk about your own career, Norm. And I gave everybody a hint, going back to your standard bred days, a driver, and then on the training side, you're involved in the biggest kinds of tragedy that anybody, in not just in our business and in racing, but a barn fire that wiped out the stable, and you rebuilt your life and your career in a different direction.
I've been around horses pretty much all my life. My father always had show horses, and so I started showing in the show ring at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years old. So I've been around the horses since I was a young fella. My father got involved in standardbreds when I was about 12. And then when I was 16, I took out my license to drive the standardbreds and went through the provisional licensing there and then started a career driving and training standardbreds. And then when the barn fire happened, and it was just a lot of circumstances, led me to the thoroughbreds. And it was a slow process, but it's the last 4 or 5 years, they've been progressively moving in the right direction, and we're very thankful for that. But we're going to continue to work hard and keep trying to do even better.
Well, and that's the only way to go. And the graded stake win, or the kind of wins that the decorated soldier is posting, there was a bit of a spread between your graded stake wins. Dawson's Legacy, who you got your hands on. I hadn't seen that name in forever.
Yeah. Well, Dawson's Legacy and Bright Adam, they were two very, very nice horses back for me in the 90s, but circumstance. I mean, it all. You just try to move forward in the business. You creep along, and you try to associate yourself with the best people that you can, and move forward. And hopefully, things will click, and hopefully, people stand behind you and support you. I think Bruno Chicken Dance and I started together about 5 or 6 years ago, and it took Bruno a year maybe to just kind of get comfortable with me, and I think he wanted to see what we could do together, if I could win any races for him, and so far that's been a very, very strong relationship, and hopefully one that will continue for years to come. But I think he was probably part and parcel of the success story because he gave us numbers, you know what I mean?
Sure.
He supplied us with a lot of horses. So you know, we once he got involved and he got comfortable and he was happy with the results, then he, you know, each year he started to support us a little more in the way of more horses. And you know, we currently train probably in the neighborhood of 30 for him, which would be pretty much 50% of our stable right now here at Woodbine. We have about 64 in training.
Well, part of the story and part of the conversation to have with you includes, you know, not just taking claimers and you know, finding better spots for them, or you know, doing something different with them to get them to perform at a high level. It's got to be fun to have horses that you start out, and that's the storyline behind Silent Mistake, the silent name filly that won the Victorian Queen on Saturday. Talk about this filly. I'm a huge fan of Silent Name, and think as a stallion, it, really underrated.
Yes, you know, that's one of the main reasons we looked at this filly was because of the sire. I mean, we're huge fans of Silent Name ourselves. She's out of a mare called Cost, and in fact, which I trained a filly, which is now three. Which was a sister to Silent, a half-sister. She was by Court Vision to Silent Mistake. And she was always a nice sound filly, limited to probably what she can do. But, you know, and I'm not as near as big a fan of Court Vision as I was of Silent Name. But the fact that she always trained forward, she was very consistent. But the Silent Mistake filly was out of a better stallion, so I thought she had an opportunity to maybe do something for us. We gave, you know, a decent dollar for her, I believe. I think we paid around 45,000 Canadian, if I remember correctly. But you know, I thought she was a good purchase. We were happy after we purchased her. She's been pretty straightforward ever since we broke her. She broke here at, she went back actually out to the consigner's farm. We bought her off Paul Buddy Gay. She went back there for a short period of time, started her training session there, her yearling training session. She got broke there. And then we moved her on to Margot Farm in Kentucky for the winter, where she finished up her winter training and then came back to us home here in mid-March.
Yeah, the win after, you know, she entered as a maiden on Saturday. We see a lot of this, of course, at this time of year with 2-year-olds, and basically wire to wire under Gary Boulanger.
Well, you know, we started her in the yearly sales stakes. I mean, simply because it was a $175,000 pot, she was eligible for that race. I mean, I could have raced her in a maiden race, which probably would have suited her better. You know, the pot was very attractive. She had been training well. We were a little concerned going into that first race, the yearly sale stakes, simply because it was 6.5, and I didn't feel that she was quite ready to run there. But, you know, just the purse money kind of, I couldn't pass by the opportunity. I took a shot.
Sure.
But we were very pleased with how she ran. She had the 14 post, and she ran a close race all the way around, moved to the lead mid-stretch, and then just got picked up at the wire. Then what I really liked about the filly was she came out of that race really well, and she had two really good breezes back, two really nice breezes. She breezed in 47 and change, which I thought was impressive, and she did it the right way. She finished up real strong, and then we just gave her just a maintenance breeze after that, and that led her into the stake on the weekend, which, you know, I thought she performed the way I believed she would. I thought she had moved forward a little bit off the first race.
How much upside is there with her?
Well, I think, you know, I don't know that you'll see much more of her this season. You know, perhaps one start, maybe two at the max, but I wouldn't be surprised if she only has one more race and we put her away and get her ready for a 3-year-old campaign. You know, she's Ontario sired, and they have the Ontario program here at Woodbine, so we'd probably be looking to map out something for her along those lines next season.
Speaking of young horses and their progress. I got to ask you about Glamination as well. You're training for Ropara Millennium Farms, and we love Ropara. This is a horse that was moved to you during the summer, and you kind of gave her a little bit of class relief on Sunday, and she responded.
Yes. You know, I was fortunate to get a call, and kind of a little bit of a story there as well. They purchased this filly off Mike Doyle. I wasn't aware of that at the time. I wasn't involved in the purchasing of the filly. But from what I understand, I believe that he may have horses with Steve Asmussen, I think. Because
oh, absolutely does. Sure.
Yeah, yes, because one of Steve's assistants called me to get my number and asked me if it was okay if they had Mr. Pera contact me to see if we'd be interested in training the filly. I guess because after they bought her, Steve must have commented that, well, she's a Canadian-bred filly, you know, she should stay in Canada. Why don't you give Norm McKnight a call? So that's really how I acquired the filly, and you know, they're great people. Worked with them just a short period of time now, but they seem like really classy people. We're happy to be involved with them, and we're very, very pleased with the filly's effort. The first time it was a little bit of an experiment. We didn't know whether she wanted the turf. We didn't really know for sure if she wanted the distance at all, but it was come up a short field, and we thought we'd take a chance. That turned out not very well for us, but she came back and redeemed herself on the weekend. I discussed it with them after that, the initial start. I said the way she's trained back and everything since that race, I think perhaps we tried to go too far, probably on the wrong surface. We should look to keep her short and perhaps some of Tapita, and that, I think that's what she prefers. And we crossed our fingers, and it worked out really well. I thought she put in an excellent performance. I was down at the yearling sales in Kentucky, and we watched her from there. But I thought she ran amazingly well.
Well, and of course, if you haven't, I don't know if you've seen the figure, but she got an 85 buyer, a career best.
Well, I hadn't seen it yet, but that's good to know. But I don't think, from what I saw, I don't think she's done. I think the rider, from what I understand, when I got back, I spoke with my son here, and he said the jockey was very pleased and said she seems like a filly you guys have a lot of fun with. So I don't think she's done at the one other than level. I think we're going to nominate her to an overnight stake here in mid-October. I think it's called the Running Angel, the Ruling Angel, and we'll try her there. For that'll be I have to discuss that with the owners, I think that will be the connections there. That'll be probably what I would suggest we aim for, and I'm sure they'll be in agreement of that. It's a straight 3-year-old filly race, so I think that's just the perfect setup for her.
Well, Norm, things going just terrific. I got a question came in from my friend Dan. He's wondering if you're coming back to Oaklawn this winter.
Absolutely. That's what we plan on doing. I have all intentions of going back. We just haven't got all the details figured out. Hopefully, I think we took 24 down there last year. Probably like to take a few extra this year if we could get the stalls, but that's our intention. We'll be there with some anyway, for sure, depending on how many stalls they allocate us there at Oaklawn. But we really enjoyed the people there, and we really enjoyed the racing there. So,
well, and before we wrap up, I got to ask you what's next for Wyattstown as well, that nice Spitestown colt.
Well, Wyattstown, we kind of had a couple options after the last stake, but We took a look at him. We had him nominated for the Gallant Bob at Parks that had just previously run, I think last weekend as well. But yep. It looked like it was going to be real salty dash. So we elected to sit that one out And we're going to give the horse lots of time, and we're going to aim him for another straight three-year-old race at Mahoney Valley called the Steel Valley Sprint.
Yeah.
So, well, that's, you know, if everything stays on course and he stays healthy and he's training well, that'll probably be the next race we'll nominate him to. We'll look at the nominations and we'll decide whether we stack up against the competition, and that'll kind of be the deciding factor whether we ship for that. But that's our goal right now. Is that's what we're aiming for, is the Steel Valley Sprint.
Well, for those of you that if the name McKnight, Norm McKnight, is new to you, you should be following him on Twitter, Norman D. Turtle. What's the significance of that that Twitter nickname?
Well, there's really no significance to it. It's just I applied for it a handle, and they rejected it, and I think I'd had a bad day racing that day, and the horses all ran slow, so I just said, well, they all ran like a bunch of turtles today. Let's just call Normandy Turtle and see how that works.
That's great.
It, so, yeah.
So that, I love
it. Really no significance.
Normandy Turtle. And it'll be in the link today when I send out
because I mean, I'll use that expression often, you know. I'll just say, oh, they ran like a herd of turtles in there, you know.
Well, they're running if they're running like tortoises, you got plenty of hares in the barn as well. Norm, I'm just delighted to get you on the show, and continued success.
All right, thanks so much.
Not at all. Norm McKnight, and a variety of recent stake winners, and all different. The two-year-old filly, Silent Mistake, and that one is, you know, being homegrown from, you know, from a young horse standpoint. Then the success with Decorated Soldier, who, you know, been kicking around and has found a home on the synthetic. And Wyattstown, if you haven't noticed, the Wyattstown won the Ontario Jockey Club and is a nice horse. And obviously Norm has been perusing the condition books, finding spots, Presque Isle, Mahoning Valley, coming up, it looks like, etc. In those spots, has done a little of everything in his career. So he and his son Brad, continued success. Back after this, we'll take our final timeout. Seth Merrow is going to join us, and we'll dive into what's left of the card today at Belmont. The three off-the-turf races, on paper, should make the pick six approachable. We'll see. We'll see what Seth thinks. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories? and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, about 15 to close out today, and having an opportunity there to talk to Norm McKnight, who we've never had on the show, and that was fun. Ricky Hendricks, too, actually, talking about Zanjabil, first time for him. Seth Merrow joins us, not the first time for Seth. Good morning.
No, I'm a veteran. I'm a big show veteran. I had a chance with Queen's Plate Weekend, interviewed Norm McKnight for the first time when we were up at Woodbine, which was kind of fun because it's fun. He had the fun background of coming over from the sulky side of the game. And now,
yes,
early out at Woodbine, he was like a coin flip up there, and it has evened out as the meet has gone along. But he was coming off a really good Oaklawn meet, and I say it every year. I love the horses coming from Oaklawn when they moved to other venues, and they did well for him on the move from Oaklawn to Woodbine.
Very much. We also, Seth, and this is something I'd love for you to mention or comment on. We had Mike Ferraro join us early in the show to pay tribute to Les Hewlett, and talked about Fiorito and his Whitney win and the Michigan Mile. But most, we talked about what a tremendous rider in Finger Lakes history Les Hewlett was, and the 84th winningest jock in racing history, 3,800 wins and a Finger Lakes institution.
Yeah, when I first got into the game, I mean, now that I think about it, I was an OTV player, capital OTV, and you might remember these days as well. There were only select out-of-state races you could play. In the early days of OTV, they would pick a few stakes races during the year, and those were the races you could play, and there would be pools in New York State. The point being, if you were playing, even through an OTV in the early days, you were playing the NYRA circuit, or you could focus on Finger Lakes, and so I played Finger Lakes enough in the early days that Les Hewlett was a very familiar name. He was one of those guys, as a lot of those smaller tracks have, who just kind of dominated on his circuit. And then the most notable, and I've talked about it plenty over the years because it was kind of a screwy situation, but the most notable was Fiorito and the Whitney, where Les Hewlett and the Finger Lakes horse come to town, break through the gate before the Whitney, get loaded back. So not only is a Finger Lakes and a Finger Lakes jockey, but breaks through the gate as well. And at that point, everybody's counting out Fiorito, but Fiorito goes on to win the Whitney at Saratoga, so that was certainly a highlight that put Les Hewlett, I think, firmly on the radar of a lot of people. So, yeah, he's one of those names that goes back to really the early days of my getting involved in the game.
Well, I wanted to be sure to pay tribute with the word circulating yesterday from Finger Lakes. Seth, we got about 7-8 minutes. We also can't go forward without acknowledging the tremendous call last week. We had the exercise to go after the big carryover at multi-day carryover at Belmont, and you zeroed in on the toughest horse in the sequence. That was well done, the Dale Capuano Invader.
Yeah, it was the first. It was coming up from Maryland, although that lost a little of its luster there. I think part of the reason they were coming up from Maryland was they had a New York bred. But it was more just, there was a little bit of breeding there. There were no monsters in the field, so I thought it was a shot where you could take a little bit of, it was a place where you could take a little bit of a shot on a horse like that. Those are the kind I like in those races. We can suss out maybe a little bit of breeding that says win early, and that one lived up to it, a nice little price.
Well done. Let's see if you can't help players today. The sequence got 46,000 pick six starts in the fourth. You can scratch the seven very quickly. Let's hit these as fast as we can. The fourth is six furlongs, fillies and mares, maiden 20s.
I'll go for a little breeding in here, too, and maybe a little bit of a price. I have it 5-6-2-1, Lip Sync, by McLean's Music, and I just pulled up before we went on the air the actual stats. So far this year, 33 first-time starters for McLean's Music, and I realize this is not a first-time starter, but I look at those first-time stats as signaling precociousness that may hold up over the first one or two. But McLean's Music so far, 33 first-time starters, only four wins. But I like to go a little deeper. Four wins, 4 seconds, 5 thirds, so 13 in the money and 33, but 8 exacta finishes, so about 25% in the exacta with the first-time starter. So I thought Lip Sync might improve off of the first career start for Rudy Rodriguez. Brooklyn Gertie in the second spot, I think with the seasonal debut, maybe a little fitter and get back to what we saw last year when this horse debuted, and then Golden Vale in the third spot at 2-1. I'm not super convinced that that horse is that much better, particularly if this starts to go down a tick or two, which it might, whether that one's that much better than the two I put on top. So 5-6-2-1.
I kind of agree, not necessarily in that order, doesn't really matter, but I think the 1, 2, and 6, the 2, 5, and 6 do need to be covered. I do agree that Lip Sync is the price. And even the 1, Jordy's Ready, is a little dangerous, maybe a C. The 5th came off the turf. These are 3 and ups, and we're going 7. We're down to a field of 5. The 3, the 4, the 6, the 7, and the 9. Both of the MTOs, Tale of Mist and Dooley, certainly eligible. But the Trombetta that stayed in, the 9, alive, absolutely needs to be given a long look. I went 7-9-6-3.
Yeah, I think you can make a case for all of them. I went with the two MTOs. I went 6-7-3-4, but I had the 9 kind of in the mix as I was deciding. But I thought the two MTOs were live. But then underneath the 3 and the 4 are both horses that in their most recent races ran very well on the dirt. So this fifth race, you know, they've scratched onto a short field. I think it's tough. I have it 6-3-4, 6-7-3-4.
Next leg, this is back on the main track. They're all on the main track, but this is a race scheduled for the main. 6.5, 3 and ups, 32 claimers, and the scratch of Forge is notable, not just because he was a contender, but because Derek Magner had two horses in here, and his other horse, Imperator, a lot of times this is a signal that the other horse is absolutely ready to go. Take out Diodoro, top of the top of the page, thank you. Top of the page, you can scratch the 7, and this is a horse that's ping-pong back and forth between some outfits. So you got 6 of them left.
Yeah, and the scratch from the Magner horse is notable, too, because the other one is owned by him. So
yes.
One that stays in. So I had them both on top. I'm going to stick with Imperador. Rockford in the second spot, off a couple of good second-place finishes up at Saratoga coming into this, and Bitumen off a nice third-place finish last time up at Saratoga for David Dugan. So I have it 6-3-1.
Well, the horse you're maybe ignoring here at your own peril is the 4, the Red Dude. And the Red Dude for Jason Service absolutely deserves consideration off the claim back at Saratoga at the beginning of the meet, claimed for 25. This is Mike Dubb, about as savvy an owner-trainer combination as there is. And so the Red Dude needs to be given a long look. And Nigel's destiny is far from impossible. This is a very tricky group, frankly. And even though, you know, we've got the number of short fields in this sequence, it doesn't make it all that much easier. Let's get to the second half. It starts with a 32 claimer that came off the turf. And here, there was a couple of horses I thought that if they stayed in were going to be interesting. Colton, Mississippi was going to be tough in either direction, main track or turf. And take it to scale. Mike Maker, the giveaway from Chad Brown. What'd you doing here?
Yeah, I'm with you. I had both of those in my mix on turf, and I kept them both in on dirt. I went 7-4-2-10. I had Colton, Mississippi on top on the turf, and this is one of those where I'm not going to switch around. I think maybe just class-wise has a little bit of an edge. Felix and Fabula was a main track only entrant, I think comes in with the surface he wants now. Off the claim for Diodoro has to be paid attention to. But as you say, take it to scale. Really maybe better on dirt. I mean, the turf probably was okay, and it was potentially gets a little bit better, but I think the horse is going to be fine with the move to the main track. So 7-4-2-10.
The eighth race, and before we mention the eighth and the ninth, I've got to slip out the news. Martin Garcia apparently had an incident during training hours this morning at Santa Anita, is across the street in the hospital looking for updates. You'll see about this here this afternoon. Apparently blacked out while riding and fell, and we'll try to get the status here in the next couple of minutes before we get off the air. But Martin Garcia injured today, and we hope that this turns out to be, you know, as good as possible. The eighth, 6 furlongs, originally scheduled for the inner turf, New York bred fillies and mares, first level allowance, and we threw in as an MTO. I said to Gary, maybe we should enter this as an MTO, and lo and behold, the field of five, She's Delightful should be very tough here for Bruce Brown.
I'm with you. I went 15-14 and want to put She's Delightful on top, but then I like DT Stable getting in there with the MTO. I thought about the MTO aspect was interesting, and in the third spot, I went to the number one Shanghai Dreams, who ran well in an off the turf for the last time. Class is a question mark, but that last race attracted my attention. So 15-14-1.
And the nightcap. This is maiden 20s and kind of bottom level, but you do have a couple of horses that aren't hopeless yet, and that included the one Metaphorical for Ray Handel.
Yeah, I went 2-7-9-5, but as you said, a race where you can make arguments for and against, and I'm not thrilled with horses like this that have had plenty of opportunity and haven't gotten it done, but it just seemed like the race two back was pretty good. It was on a muddy track. It's one of those races. Gravitating in the second spot, same scenario. But this one's first off the claim for Rudy. That attracted my attention. Then Uncle Larry is one of those that maybe is more logical that you would tilt toward in a spot like this. A little more lightly raced and maybe some upside potential. But the race two back down at Gulfstream on the dirt, certainly number-wise, is going to stack up well with this bunch. So for me, 2-7-9-5.
Seth Merrow, everybody, you can follow him on Twitter. What are you up to?
It's been a slow week on Twitter. I gotta fire up again. What I'm gonna have to do is when I'm sitting in, I meant to do it this week, when I'm sitting in doing the handicapping show in the afternoon, I'll have to toss out a few picks.
Well, Seth Merrow 2. Seth Merrow 2. We don't know who Seth Merrow 1 is. He's number one with us.
And I appreciate that.
Follow Seth, who has actually really stalled like a snowmobile on dirt. 641 followers. I think he had 640 2 weeks ago. All right, come on. We gotta put the spurs to Seth, and I got to put the spurs to the big getaway here. Good luck to everybody. Good luck to Rajiv on Carlisle Bell. Hope she can pick up some pieces today in that eighth race. And good luck to everybody playing. I'll have the final decisions up and the plays, and give me a half hour or so. Pete Fornatel, Mike Ferraro, paying tribute to Les Hewlett, Sid Fernando, Norm McKnight, Ricky Hendricks, and Seth. Good luck today, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. The dream of it, the dream of it.
the summertime song. Fall on the apple. Oh, there goes a Buick 49, like sheep with the angels riding, riding down the line. We think there is a soul.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sarmon Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.